Hi, I'm Javon Williams, and I'm the owner of Go-Go Party Bus Central Florida.
And I'm Tracy Swain, and I'm the owner of Daniela Rose Productions.
And together, we are two chicks in the city,
taking you through an entrepreneur's journey.
In today's episode, we are talking with Aria Brish. Aria is a business leader and best-selling author. He has led a wide variety of successful terms in different industries and business functions. His business acumen includes CEO and GM roles, board of director services, mergers and acquisitions, business development, turnarounds, and change leadership. He also has worked with Fortune 500 corporations, entrepreneur leadership, consultant engagements, and nonprofit activities. Aria is the author of a top 10 bestseller, Lay an Egg and Make Chicken Soup. Audience, welcome, Aria Brish.
Yay.
Thank you for having me.
We're glad to have you.
And you have so much knowledge and experience that you've talked about there, and also your book, which I love the title, Lay an Egg and Make Chicken Soup. So we want to hear all about that. So tell us all about that, both your experience and then the book that you have.
Okay, so the name of the book, since you started, the name of the book came from a common chicken and an egg dilemma that very often you have when you start something new or start a new business or come with an idea for a new product or things like that. So there is always a chicken and egg question. How much time should I spend, or how much money should I spend on something I'm not sure yet that I'm going to do? Right. So that's the origin or the source of the name, the metaphor that comes with it.
Okay.
I took it to the next step and made the chicken soup out of it. The motivation of the book, or the driving or the trigger for the book came a lot from the past, I would say, 10 years. I have mentored many, many, many entrepreneurs. And I saw a common thread among everybody. Most entrepreneurs or first-time entrepreneurs are young people. They don't have too many scars yet of mistakes made. Going back in my career, when I was a young engineer early in my career, I made exactly the same mistakes. So it comes with experience. The more mistakes you make, the more you know what to watch for.
Right.
I call them blind spots, or military slang says landmines. You know where the landmines are waiting for you. When you don't have the experience, you don't know what to watch for. So most entrepreneurs have great ideas, almost always, but very, very often they lack the experience of what blind spots waiting for them, or what landmines, or you know, speed bumps, or whatever metaphor you want to use. That's where the missing part of the recipe to success. So I started with blogs, writing blogs on different cases that shows you what's coming, what to watch for, and you know, I didn't plan to write a book, but then you know, a year into that blogging thing, I said, "Oh, I have enough material to put it together into a book."
Wow.
So it was kind of, it's like being pregnant, but you don't know that you are pregnant until 2 weeks before it happens.
Oh, wow.
For me, for you to say that, that's too funny.
The visual, I'm like, oh,
yeah,
my goodness.
I'm like, okay, you would know.
Even my family didn't know. I told them, you know, like 2 or 3 months before I published. Yeah. I said, guess what? I have a book to publish.
Yeah, you would give it birth. Yeah. You would give it birth to your book.
Wow. Yeah.
I follow you. I like it.
Yeah. I know. And you're like, I'm doing 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well, that's the best way. You don't have to wait for so long.
Absolutely. In one of your chapters, as we're diving deeper into your book, I wanted to actually get some more of your insight on one of your chapters. You said the title is Better to Be Different Than to Be Better. Can you elaborate on that chapter?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. Many cases when people come with a new idea or innovative or a new product or a new business, they say, okay, my competitor X is doing this or that. I can do 20% better. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to compete that way because people, your customers, you have to be 10 times better, not 20% better to really be a newcomer into a market. And it's much easier to compete if you come up with such a different idea that you basically change the whole rules of the game.
Absolutely.
You know, you think you compete in basketball, but you create a new sport that has totally different rules. And now I'm the champion, right? Because I'm the only one playing in that sport.
Right.
So I'll give you a few examples from the history. One example, most of my career was with Motorola. Mm-hmm. And Motorola back in the, you girls are too young maybe to remember, but back in the 1980s and 1990s, Motorola was almost a synonym for cellular phone.
Yes. Absolutely. And that was my first one was
okay. See, okay.
Motorola. Yeah. Well, my
mom. You don't look like that, but okay.
Oh, yeah.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
So if you remember, the competition in the cell phone was mostly, back in the days, features, and the feature was how many names you can have in your library.
Right.
That was the main thing. The smartphones did not exist at the time. So how many names you can store, what's the quality of the sound, and the other parameter was the battery life. So the better the phone was, better quality, less battery life, because it will suck up the battery faster than anybody else. The phone was plain black.
Yes,
right.
And they all competed in these three technical parameters until Nokia came up. And Nokia came in the mid-90s and they said, hey, cell phones are becoming, you know, every teenager has a cell phone, so let's make it fashion accessory. And they came up with a series of cell phones that the option was just a color option.
Yeah.
It was a plain cell phone, nothing fancy from a technical point of view. You just they gave you a choice of colors. Now it looks very obvious, but back then it was like, wow. and they broke the market that everybody bought Nokia phones just because they could, you know, choose different colors. And Motorola looked at them, you know, looked down at them and say, hey, we are a serious technology business. What are they playing with colors here? They must be kidding. But Nokia laughed all the way to the bank.
To the bank.
Yeah.
So that's an example of differentiating yourself in a totally different angle. If you go to like a simple, let's say a restaurant business, okay? You can be a better food. That's one way, but that's being better. But you can be different in some different angle. You can have the best view in town. You put the restaurant on the top floor of the tallest building in town. That's a differentiator. Nobody, once you're on the top floor of the tallest building, nobody can compete you because you're in the tallest. There is a restaurant here in Austin overlooking the lake. The view is magnificent. People go there and pay premium money just for the view. The food is okay, yeah. but not more than okay. Another restaurant here in Austin, they are in downtown on a top floor, and the bathroom is with a large windows overlooking the lake. So people go there just for the opportunity to use the bathroom and watch the lake as they do their business in the bathroom. So that's a differentiator that nobody think about. And the thing is, it's only in the guy's bathroom. So couples stand in line, they're waiting for all the guys to come out, and then the guy takes the girl to watch the bathroom with a view. So and it becomes like almost a tradition. You have to be there at least once in your life to see that, whether you're a guy or a girl.
Yeah.
Wow. So
these are ways to differentiate yourself at a different level. Who would think that a restaurant will become such a attraction just because of the bathroom, the view from the bathroom?
Wow. Yeah. And those are all really, really good points. I know nowadays, especially with technology, it's all about being a disruptor, right? I mean, if you think of like Amazon or Apple or any of those any of the big companies that are that kind of came on the scene, like, you know, with smartphones or iPads, you know, no one even knew you needed an iPad. Right, no one even knew what it was, right? There was no such thing as an iPad before. So
That's a very good point that you mentioned. You know, Apple is a good point. When they came with an iPod, right? That's what was
iPod,
a little,
the iPod,
no music thing. Nobody,
yeah.
You know, the smallest thing you can get is a DVD or a CD-ROM, whatever it was called. Right. I forgot even. Mm-hmm. So it was a few inches on
each
side.
Like the Walkman or something.
Like the Walkman, exactly.
Yeah, the Walkman.
And they Apple said, okay, people like smaller the better, so let's make something 1 inch.
Right.
And nobody thought that you can put it all in a semiconductor memory instead of a rotating disk. Mm-hmm. So that's where their innovation kind of anticipating what people will want, because often the people, they don't know your technology enough to ask for what's possible to make.
Right. Yeah.
You know, Henry Ford came up with the best example back in the days before automobiles. Mm-hmm. He said, if I ask a customer what do they want, they want a faster horse.
Right. Yeah.
I invented the automobile, which is faster than the horse.
Yeah, he was the first disruptor, right? You didn't even know you needed this automobile.
Exactly.
This thing with an engine. But I do find it interesting because you mentioned differentiators, because I think of like an entrepreneur who says, you know, I want to open a restaurant, or I want to open a boutique or a store. Those are things you see everywhere, you know, and I think it's interesting to make sure to challenge them to ensure that what they're offering is different, as opposed to just another one, or we do better customer service. That's not necessarily, you know, that can make you different, but it's also not sustainable, right?
Absolutely. I know in some of the businesses, like as you were mentioning, historically, when Apple was just on the cusp, Canon camera, that was huge. That was big. Mm-hmm. Everybody wanted a Canon camera.
Yeah.
Now you don't even hear it.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're in photography.
Yeah.
Right now your camera, your phone, your smartphone can take is your camera, and it can take as pictures as best as a Canon camera, to be honest with you.
Well, and was just going to say, that's the kind of the cool or interesting thing about disruptors is usually something goes away. Like you bring in this new thing, like you brought in these the automobile, and you know, you don't see anyone riding horses anymore unless it's for fun.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned the Canon, the Canon camera used to be a customer of mine 20 years ago.
Yeah, so, you would think about it. You know, and with entrepreneurs to start forward thinking, I think that's what we're trying to say. If they forward thinking, they can look at examples around them, like the shopping mall. Now they're becoming like dinosaurs. Everybody's now going out to the outlets or the stores where you can drive up to and not go into a huge mall anymore. A lot of them are sitting empty. So in terms of forward thinking, I think that's what you your book is trying to get out entrepreneurs to think about.
Right. So I'm glad you mentioned the mall. People used to go to the mall to shop or to buy stuff.
One of them.
Yeah. But here is if you just want to buy stuff, you go to the internet, you buy much faster.
Amazon.
Exactly.
People go to the mall now more for the experience because they enjoy the shopping experience. There is a differentiator between going shopping in a brick and mortar versus buy stuff on the internet. So the value that the internet gives you, they gives you the convenience of buying stuff, you know, from your home, and you can do it in a few minutes just from your computer, but people go to the mall, so they go have coffee with friends. It's a social thing. They go and do some window shopping, people shopping. That's important in the mall. There is a differentiator between shopping on the internet and shopping on the mall.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Or going to boutiques that are totally not in the mall, like small boutiques, you know, in downtown, like Austin. I'm in Austin now. There is a movement of buy from the small ma and pop local shops, and they have all kinds of programs to encourage people to go and buy in the small local shops, not in the big malls, not on the internet, but the small local shops.
Yeah. Shop local.
We're actually starting to see the trend now where even Amazon, as you mentioned, they're now starting to get into the grocery side of the industry. And then now we're seeing grocery stores trying to keep up with Amazon by now offering delivery. Just trying to keep up with Amazon as they're moving forward. So you're actually seeing the dynamic of businesses that normally didn't even do that. You went to the grocery store. Now the grocery stores are coming to you.
That's another good thing. People view innovation as technology, but innovation can be in service.
Yes, absolutely.
Innovation can be in other aspects, not like we saw with Nokia, the color of the telephone. It doesn't have to be the technology. It can be
something. That's a good point.
So the good example about the service being a competitive advantage is Domino Pizza. Domino Pizza and Google went IPO, went to the stock market about the same time, a few weeks apart. Domino Pizza, if you bought Domino Pizza stock back in the days, you would do two times better than if you bought the Google shares when they came out. So Domino Pizza, even though Google is considered, you know, the wonder child of Silicon Valley, but Domino Pizza did two times better than Google just based on service alone. Another example is Uber. Uber, although they use technology, but they did not invent anything new. They just integrated GPS with credit card, and now you can order an Uber drive in few minutes, where if you call the traditional taxi, you have to wait for half an hour at least.
Right.
and also Uber doesn't own cars.
Unique.
They don't even own cars.
They piggyback on your personal on the driver's car.
Exactly. So they changed
another innovation there. Yeah.
They changed the business model.
Exactly. Exactly.
Complete disruptor to the market. Which you're in New York City, no one takes taxis anymore, right?
So unfortunately, and when I wait for the taxi, I call after half an hour, I call them, where is my taxi? I'm being yelled at. for being impatient.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I have so many bad taxi experiences. Yeah. Just like, I'll just take an Uber.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it is interesting you mention service, innovation in the service industry, because I guess I'd be curious to know your thoughts or recommendations. It seems like, I mean, if you think about, say, for instance, a realtor or a loan officer or, you know, those types of businesses where the differentiator might be the person, right? Or how they communicate or how they go about performing their business. Yes. But sometimes it may not seem that way. So what type of advice do you provide to service-based companies or industries that are looking for sort of that competitive advantage, that thing that makes them different from everyone else?
Right. Yeah, so
good question.
It's a good question. I'm kind of an exception in that respect. I'm loyal to my suppliers, so to speak. So every week, some stockbroker calling me and telling me how great they can do better in the market for me and da-da-da. I say, no, my stockbroker is a personal friend. I'm not going to fire my stockbroker just because you promised me something better and I doubt that you're something better is really better. Mm-hmm. So in my case, it's more about a personal connection. People today are more mobile. They change location very often.
Yeah. Yes.
So the one way to disrupt, to attract new customer in different cities is to find a way to put your hands on the newcomers to this city. And Austin is a good example. Austin, I think, is growing. There is 200 people per day coming to Austin. That's the net influx of people.
Yeah.
So the trick in that case is to find those people, whether through a church group or partner with the HR of the big employers and find out who are these people and what can I do for them. Mm-hmm. Whether it's house shopping, apartment shopping, buying a new car, whatever a new person needs in a new community, even social groups, what restaurant to go, what bar to go to, whatever it is, where the action Friday night, all these things are new young people coming to a new city. That's what they're looking for.
Right.
And the idea is how to find these people and how to deliver to them the communication. Partner with HR is one way. Partner with a church group, newcomers to every church will have a newcomers, club or something. Go and volunteer there, and that's how you can find the new customers.
Okay, great.
Great. I know as we are talking, you mentioned something about learning, giving advice to some of those service-based entrepreneurs on our podcast and are listening, how to connect with newcomers. That can go across any industry, reaching out to the ones that are coming in. However, in your book in chapter 16, you talk about the learning curve. Okay. Can you share some of your insight on that?
Yeah, that's very important for every entrepreneur, because anytime you do something new, it takes longer, more expensive, you make more mistakes, which your mistakes can, number one, they are more expensive. Number two, they upset your customer. Back in the day, when you change a tire in your car, I don't know if you ever had this experience, but back in the days, it happens almost monthly that you have to change a tire. It will take you first time, maybe half an hour to do that. But after you did it a few times, it could take a few minutes. And if you look at professional, like in a race car, they change the tires in seconds. Tires. So that's a learning curve. Now, if you are, let's say you are a new restaurant, okay, so you have a new chef, new menu, new recipes, the chef has to you know, look at the recipes. The chef doesn't remember all the ingredients and all the recipes by heart yet, so it takes them time. I would guess often they'll make mistakes, so the customer is unhappy, send the dish back to the kitchen to change something. You know, more time for the steak, less time for the steak. Steak is not pink enough or too pink, whatever. So that's a learning curve in a restaurant. So the service people are not trained enough to whatever, take the customer's order. So everything is slower. You spend more time in taking the order. You spend more time to fix the dish. You make more mistakes, and guess what? You pay all these people, all these employees by the hour, okay?
Yeah.
So if the service person can serve 20 tables in 1 hour versus when you just open the restaurant, they can do maybe only 5 tables per hour. So you have to keep 4 service people for, let's say, a new restaurant with 20 tables. The first few weeks, you need 4, 5, 6 service people, where, you know, later on, several months into it or several years into it, you can have only 2 or 3 service people. So that's a learning curve of the restaurant. Same thing if you come up with a new product. It takes longer and more expensive. You need to order a raw material. Okay? If you order, let's say, 200 bottles of something, let's say you are a salon, you have to order your material for the salon. If you order at the beginning 10 bottles of something, it costs you X. If you order 200 bottles of something, it's much cheaper. So the learning curve is also coming from your suppliers charging higher price if you order lower volume of whatever you order, versus when you order higher volume of whatever you need. And the same with the restaurants. If you buy, you know, so many pounds of meat versus if you buy a smaller amount, and the price per pound is different.
You know, I was just thinking as we were talking about learning curve. Do you have a Walmart there in Austin?
Yes, of course.
Okay. Here in this area, they have started to kind of wind out the cashiers.
Yeah.
And now they, with automation, they've started to put in these where you scan yourself.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
I like to say, you know, I'm paying for it and I got to work too.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I'm like, so, you should be paying me for this.
Exactly. But what they did was, you know, I feel they made an assumption that they didn't need to train any customers. So they just opened them up and they were starting like 1 or 2. And that was the learning curve. So they still had an amount of cashiers. You know, that was still helping customers, but they were still integrating these now self-serve registers.
Yeah.
Now, I just went into Walmart just this week, and there are no cashiers.
Wow, really?
None. They are all
scanned. That's the way they're going these days. Yeah.
And automation, not only is technology and service, we now have to add in automation. Because now automation, you can go to a restaurant and order your food and pay for your food, and no, you won't even see a waiter. They only bring in you the food.
That's an excellent example, because there is learning curve with the customers.
Exactly.
That's what you're talking about. So go back to the restaurant example. When I go to a restaurant first time, I spend 20 minutes going through the menu.
Yeah.
And that's 20 minutes where the waiter is standing there and waiting for me to make up my mind. Well, if I go to the same restaurant several times, I come, I know exactly what I'm going to order. So it makes the restaurant more efficient. And once again, the waiter is standing, waiting for me to make a decision. They're still paying the waiter or the waitress, but they're paying her to wait for me to make up my mind, because I'm not familiar with the menu. So that's also a learning curve.
Yeah, there's so many. And nowadays, things are changing so quickly. I mean, Javon, as you mentioned, you know, one day you go to Walmart, there's people there serving you. The next day you go, and all they're all gone. And I'm like begrudgingly putting my stuff up there and scanning it myself. I know, because if you, you know, it's Walmart, okay if you just have small items. I know. If you have a small basket, but if you have, you know, you go to Walmart, you can spend like a good $100, $200, and you're like, I'm like, I need an hourly pay for this. This is not cool. Like, I'm paying you, and I'm working. Yes. This is not fun.
And when you go to a supermarket you're familiar with, you know, in my case, the neighborhood supermarket is a different chain. So I already have my routine going.
Right.
You know, I finish my list in 20 minutes. But when I go to a new place,
it
takes me 2 hours to find a way.
Exactly.
So that's another example.
Yes. There's so many. I mean, I think the worst offender, though, which they still, I think, are working through, is the chip readers when you go to check out. Because every location, it's different. I'm like, do I hit the yellow button, the red button? Is it X? Which one? You know, every place is different. That industry did not roll out smoothly, and it's still like years later. You don't know which button to press. Yeah.
And when you order, like when you buy something different that people don't normally buy, the cashiers, they don't know what it is.
No, so
they have to look up on the computer or call the manager. What is this vegetable? I never saw this vegetable in my life.
And I'm like, it's a sweet potato.
Exactly. So it's once zucchini. Again, they pay them by the hour. They spend 10 minutes to figure out what is this weird-looking vegetable I'm buying. It's another example of a learning curve that costs more money.
Wow.
Probably cost them the 10 minutes that they figure out this vegetable. It cost them more money to pay that
the
person in the cash register to figure out what it was. And
so that's why they vegetable. Make you do it. Now they're like, you figure it out. You figure out what number to press.
Oh, I hate it. Oh,
that's why I don't go to the self-service, because if the cash register attendant cannot figure it out, I won't be able to figure it out on your own.
Well, that's one that is, you know, Javon mentioned Walmart. That is one new thing they have, where the, you know, huge Walmart, they might have one cashier now. So they've removed all of the cashiers.
Yeah. I just went this week and it was just that example.
Yeah.
There were no cashiers. Whoa. All self-service, and the line was almost out the door.
Yes.
Because they were trying to, like you said, trying to figure out how to scan, you know, and if you don't have experience, it's going to take you not only 30 minutes going through the store, but now another 30 minutes just standing there trying to figure out how the system works.
Yeah.
You didn't get any training. Definitely not getting paid for it.
No.
So.
And, you know, like I said, you know, it's different when you have five items and you're in the grocery store. But Walmart, you know, you have 30, 40 items in the basket. It's awful.
Exactly. I need to check out Walmart. Walmart is a little far away. So I have to drive and see the self-checking line myself again.
All right. Well, all right. It has been such a pleasure speaking with you. There's so many that I come from business background, so I could go on and on. I love talking about business and the different strategies and things that we see on the market and innovation. And of course, with entrepreneurs, that makes it even more fun. But you, in addition to your book, you provide various services as well, correct? I don't think we mentioned your company, so I want to make sure we do that.
All right. Thank you for reminding me. My company is called CXO360, and the website is CXO360.net, and you can find all kinds of free downloads, different papers, different summary of the book even. So it's like you don't have to buy the book, you just download the summary of the book, and then if you like the summary, what the book adds to the conversation is many real life examples that the summary obviously doesn't have. Summary is more like a checklist of what to plan for when you start a new business. So the structure of the book is kind of similar to a checklist. Every chapter is a checkpoint with one page or a couple of pages describing the topic, whether the topic is, you know, how to come up with a new idea, or the topic is marketing, or the topic is sales, whatever the topic is. Each discipline has a topic, has a chapter, and then few examples. So you can download the free download from the website, or if you want to entertain yourself with examples and lesson learned from different other businesses and learn from real life successes and mistakes. And I try to make the book entertaining. So
yeah.
And so far the feedback I got was that it's easy read, even though it's a serious business book, but easy read with the flow of the, it's almost like a collection of short stories of different business cases.
Very cool.
Great.
Well, I would definitely look forward to reading it and engaging with you on your website. Like I said, I love business stuff, so I can read that all day.
Yes. I do too. Yes.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much again, Ari, Arie, with all the different pronunciations.
Yes. I'm used to different pronunciations.
Yes. Arie.
And we'll just encourage everyone to go out and get your book, Land, Egg, and Make Chicken Soup.
Okay. Thank you, girls. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
You too.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast episode. If you did, please hit the subscribe button and share with your friends.
Check us out on social media and visit our website at www.twochicksinthecity. That's TWOCHICS inthecity.com.